I don't know. Should the show have an intro kind of like One Shots, or should it just have music?
I think so. I think it should totally have an intro. If we have to write one right now, we could totally
do that.
Let's write
one.
But I think it should have like a little... I love your intro for One Shots, and I don't think you need to like make it super long, but even like a 30-second... Like, hello, I'm William Nunn, and this is my experience, and the show is this, and this is what the show will be about, and my guest today is this person, and she, you might know her from these things, and then that'll be like, hello, Aaron, how are you doing today? Like, NPR-style lead-in, I guess.
You created a completely unique voice doing a bad impression of me.
that was... That's my impression.
You can create all sorts of voices by doing bad impressions of people.
That's funny because whenever I talk as someone, I don't like when I do that, I do automatically go into like a bad impression of their voice. My husband gets mad because I make him like, and he's like, I do not sound like that. I was like, I know.
Voices that cooks, voices that cooks. We are doing a show called Voices That Cooks. Hey, do 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 do. Voices that cooks. Hey, voices that cooks. You are listening to a podcast. It lets you eat and think about eating while talking to voice actors that like to cook.
Thank you, Odysseus Claw, for just magically creating our intro for the very first episode of Voices That Cook. That's right, everybody. This is the first episode of Voices That Cook, where I, myself, William Nunn, get to talk to voice actors that enjoy cooking. And for any of you who have never heard any content from me before, thank you so much for being here. It is a pleasure to meet you. And for those of you who have maybe heard my other show, which is One Shot's D&D Character Podcast, you may recognize that character that was singing earlier,
Odysseus Claw,
who I'm probably going to see if I can get him to maybe write maybe a bit more of a comprehensible theme for that song. That could actually be kind of fun. We shall see. We'll see what happens by episode two. But for episode one, we're going to start out with a very, very, very good friend of mine, a very talented friend of mine, who I am so, so happy to have on in the very first episode. And that is Aaron Nicole Lundquist. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, William. Glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me for the very first episode of Voices That Cook.
Yes, yes, yes. And one of the things that made this show start, I'll give kind of just a quick backstory for what made me want to do the show. I've really enjoyed doing one shots. And as of this recording, there's only one more episode left to record for season one. And after that, all I'm going to be able to do while finishing up the rest of season one is just edit. I won't have any more episodes to record with anyone. So I felt like I was already starting to miss not having that opportunity because I've really loved making podcasts to interact with other voice actors. And it's just been a really great thing. But one thing that's really surprised me, especially as myself, which I nicknamed myself the voice that cooks, I found out that there are tons of other voice actors that love cooking, and Aaron is one of them. So I just started asking multiple people, and I put out a tweet seeing who all would want to join the show, and I've already got over 30 guests lined up. So I'm pretty amazed with the response that it got, and I'm surprised that there are so many people with not only just that just love to cook and create characters and act with their voice, as well as just act in general, but also just... Like, there's so many different recipes and there's so many different things that they do that it can bring out a great variety in the show and may even make me want to make my own recipes based on what they would recommend or what are their favorites and all that. And maybe all of you can do the same as well while listening to this show. So we're going to start out, though, because what I would usually like to do, since this is Voices That Cook, we're going to start out talking about the voice acting aspect, where I will want to ask my guests, how did you start in the world of voice acting? Where did that begin? And then when did you start cooking? When did that fascination happen? And then we can share our favorite recipes and talk about whatever else, and then we will probably bounce. So that's kind of the rhythm of the show right now. So I guess I'm going to ask Aaron my first question to you. What were the first steps to you becoming a voice actor?
So I used to start the story with I worked behind the scenes in the entertainment industry, where I was a costume designer turned art director for indie film and television out of San Antonio, Texas. But the real story actually begins with I have been on stage since I was 2 years old. I did tap, jazz, and ballet, and then when I was five, I started doing a summer theater program every summer from the ages of five to the ages of 14, at which point I was, you know, I had done middle school plays and high school plays, and then I went to college, and I did college plays. So my acting journey actually begins from as far back as I can remember. Then when I was 29... I was sort of dabbling in all sorts of different aspects of the entertainment industry, trying to find my place because I loved cosplay and I liked creating costumes. And when you're a cosplayer, it kind of combines a little bit of that acting flair. So that was what drew me to costuming. And when I started doing it for television and film, I realized that I don't like that as much. Mm-hmm. I don't like that as much. I actually enjoyed doing sets and props more than the costuming aspect, because there's just when you're doing something for yourself, it's one thing. When you're doing something for an entire cast, it's a different story.
Fair.
So when I was on set, I was messing around with the actors and doing all sorts of different voices, and their characters were playing off of my fake characters. And the sound guy overheard this and said, "Hey, have you ever thought about being a voice actor?" And I was like, "Well, yes, of course. This is the dream. Hasn't everybody thought about being a voice actor? This is just glorious." And I'm ready. I'm ready for my close-up. Why are you asking me this? And it turned out he did casting for all sorts of commercial projects out of San Antonio and Austin. So I got incredibly lucky because all of my early jobs were paid, like decently paid work from the local market in Texas. And I was like, "Oh, da-da, this is voice acting and I'm doing a great job." And then a friend of mine heard that I did voice work and was starting an audio drama called Splintered Caravan. This friend was Chris Garrett, and he's incredible, and I hope he listens to this podcast. And he wanted me to audition for a character. He kind of gave me three different ones to try out for and ended up casting me as one of the lead characters, Lael, who's the robot sister of the protagonist. And that was my first character role in voice acting. And I knew that that's what I really wanted to do. I loved commercials because it gave me a lot of extra money. It was really nice. But my soul was in character work. So I suppose it was 2019 that I really leapt into it. I decided to get serious and I started auditioning all the time and recording all the time. And I sought out classes and coaching. And ever since then, everything's just been on this really steady rocket ship uphill. It's been amazing. It's been an incredible journey. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
That's really amazing. And I know we had talked about this before, but I wanted to share this with everyone. There was a point where I wanted to do a lot of cyberpunk research for a fan-made Rick and Morty series I had made back in the day. And one of the audio dramas I had listened to, I didn't finish it, but one of them I had listened to was actually Splintered Caravan. I had actually listened to a little bit of it, and years later, I was talking with you, and I looked into your IMDb, and I saw your name on there, and I was just blown away, like, wait a minute, I've already heard you in something.
I was so flattered, so it was like the middle of the, not middle of the night, but it was early evening.
Yeah.
And I get this message from William, and you're just like, "Oh my God.
Like, how did this happen?
I just found out that you're Tin Can and Splintered Caravan, and I love this." And I was like, "Oh my God, I love her too. She's amazing."
That was such an unexpected surprise. And then before this episode started, I found another.
I found another.
So I went through an audio Dracula phase for a little bit.
Oh, stop.
And I just started looking up all sorts of stuff. I found a abridged audiobook version of Dracula narrated by Christopher Lee. I found a audio drama version that had Tony Todd as Dracula and former One Shots D&D character podcast guest Nicholas Ewan, who gets killed by Tony Todd, which I was completely amazed by, though that one was way too short. It should have been longer. Then another audio drama that was on Audible that I decided to listen to, and then the Dracula a radio play one, which I didn't finish because I just lost track of time. I moved into other stuff, but I got about as far as Jonathan Harker's section. Like, I think I finished his, and I'm pretty sure in retrospect, I heard you as one of the vampire sisters.
Yes, that's incredible. I haven't met anyone yet who had listened to that and given feedback on that. I'm so excited that you heard Dracula radio play by Cruz Flores, who was really incredible. It actually was premiered in San Francisco at a Playhouse, which was super exciting because it was during COVID times that he sort of conceptualized this version of Dracula, sort of showing things more through the lens of Mina Harker than through Jonathan Harker. But it's important to know Jonathan Harker's section in order for it to impact Mina later, obviously. So I play one of the first characters you meet, actually, which is the innkeeper's wife.
Oh, that was you too.
Jonathan towards the character. That was me too. And then I play the lead vampire sister who tries to seduce both Jonathan and Mina to come to her side away from Dracula because she wants all the power and why shouldn't she have it? And it's been really, it was very fun. That was actually one of the first roles I got when I really started back into the foray in 2019. So
wow. I definitely want to go back and finish it now that I know you're in it. I want to go through that, and I started listening to, and this is so much cooler than it sounds. There are people who actually put together this actual recreation of the Orson Welles Dracula radio drama on stage, but they made it like how they did back then, and they had high school students playing everyone, using all of the equipment that they would have used to make the sound effects and the ambience. And I think they had like one of the music conductors doing like, I think there were two of them using like an organ and a piano to help make the music and such. And it was, I only watched 12, maybe 15 minutes of it. And I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen, that they're literally, all the stuff that you can do in audio drama these days, you can do in a computer. They're doing all of this shit on stage to bring this to life. You could close your eyes and it's like listening to a radio play.
That's so exciting. And it's beautiful because that's an art form that I hope never dies. Mm-hmm. Like that live sound production. Like I enjoy going to see films that are placed to live orchestra.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've ever had that experience.
I want
to. But if you kind of, yeah, Google it, because there are places all around the country where you can see, like I saw a Harry Potter film that was set, like all of the music was done live and then all of the dialogue was separated. So the dialogue you were watching on the screen, but all of the music was right there. And it was this very beautiful, immersive experience. And I hope that and things like true radio play where they're, you know, they're making the thunder with the giant saws and stuff. Like, I love that. It's so good.
That would be really fun to do one day, something like that with a lot of that stuff, or at least maybe I could find a sound engineer that could help me with that. I don't know. Maybe something for the future, William. But one thing that definitely, I definitely want to talk to you about that we definitely share a major commonality with is a project called Pursuit of Erlenia. You actually got to be one of the narrators for it, and I got to play a character in it. And that was a really great full cast audiobook that we got to be a part of. What could you tell us about your experience with that?
Yeah, for sure. So Pursuit of Erlenia was the first in this kind of cyberpunk world. I love cyberpunk. Can you tell?
Yes.
by author T.S. Wieland, who has a beautiful series. There's a ton of series of books out there that he has on Audible and Spotify, and likely other places where you can find podcasts as well. But Pursuit of Erlenia is this romance adventure about these two individuals from very different worlds, sort of like an over-city, under-city dichotomy. And I play the narrator for the inner voice of the female protagonist. The way that they had, I've never seen a book done this way. And I was so excited to be a part of it because there was the male character and a male protagonist or a male narrator that followed him. And then our female character, Robin, and I was, who's played by Kelsey Mayer, who's also a good friend of yours.
Yes. And hopefully she'll be on the show at some point.
Oh, good. That's awesome. So like I was like Kelsey's inner voice and sort of what she was seeing in the world, and I set the scene for her, and it was really unique. What was interesting too was that it was recorded like a true audiobook, so there were no table reads, there was no interaction. I didn't even know what the other characters sounded like until it was all put together and released to the world, and so that was interesting and really beautiful. I look forward to working again with T.S. Wieland. He's a brilliant writer.
Oh yes, he's a really good dude. And those are all, I will put the links for that in the description if you guys want to hear them too. It is available, all 29 chapters, to hear on SoundCloud and Spotify. So you can listen to them right now, or better yet, after this episode ends. And you get to hear me as the interviewer, which I believe that was chapter 22, somewhere around there. If you get around to hearing it, you will definitely hear me in there in a very intense scene with Kelsey. And
yeah, and I narrate that section. I remember that section very well.
Yes, definitely one of the darker roles I have had.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Very, very dark sequence. So now that we've really covered a lot of really awesome, well, the last thing I'm going to mention, and as of right now, I just in case maybe this episode comes out before your one-shots episode does, you do get to also be on my one-shots D&D character podcast episode as probably one of my favorite characters that's ever been added in. And Kuzara, I can't wait for people to hear and meet and just see why I'm gushing right now. Just all of y'all look forward to that one whenever that comes out. We'll figure out the time frame there. But I know as far as the show schedule, it'll be October. So whenever this episode airs, it shouldn't be too far behind or too far ahead. But yeah, just look forward to that one. And if that one comes out, then I'll put a description for that. You know, the timelines work. But I really loved having you on there. You're so good at improv and creating things. So anyone listening right now needing to hire someone, hire Erin. She's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, William. You're fantastic. Aww. And thank you again for having me on this show because the voice acting is obviously incredibly important to me, but so is cooking. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to talk about that with you as
yes,
well.
Yes, that was about to segue into that. And that was actually a very good segue. I really liked how that worked out.
Did you like that?
I did. It was sizzling.
So I'm going to take over hosting duties right now. So in case you don't know, William Nunn is known as the voice that cooks. Mm-hmm. And cooking is very important. Like half of his feed is made up of different voice acting things and promoting different projects that he loves or that he's working on. And the other half are these amazing pictures of food that I'm like, I like it. I like it every time. I want that. And I'll take two of those.
Yes. So before we started, I had made probably one of the thickest sausage burgers I had ever made in my life. And I shared that picture with you. Delighted by not only how it looked, but how it tasted. It tasted so freaking good. For anyone out there who has never had a sausage burger, I strongly recommend it. Just get some Italian sausage and turn it into a burger patty and let that heat on a skillet or a grill. Obviously, if on a skillet, use your oil, whatever oil you like to use. I use canola oil. And I like to just season them with salt, pepper, and Italian seasoning. That's all you really need. But if you want to add other stuff, feel free. And because they can get really thick, I always like to make sure that they are cooked in the oven. And if I ever do a half pounder, which is what I did today, I did two half pounders, one for me and one for my mom. I cook them maybe about for 3 to 4 minutes on each side till they get to a nice coloration. And you can see it looking pretty caramelized, but not burned. I really, I really don't want it burned. Sometimes I've had it burned and it's fine, but I usually prefer not to have it burned just because there's a nicer texture to it if you just sear it the right way. And then you leave the really thick half pounders in the oven for 12 minutes at 350 degrees on a baking sheet with aluminum foil. And then as you wait for that to get out of the oven, while the skillet is still hot and filled with that sausage grease, you put in your hamburger buns, let them toast on both sides. And then my mom had actually found a spicy chipotle mustard that I put on both buns. And then when the burger is out, I put it on the bottom bun, then I add in pepper jack cheese on top so it will melt onto the burger, and then I put the other bun on there, and sometimes the seasoning will actually stay with the oil, so the burger buns themselves will be kind of seasoned too, which just gives them a nice flavor, especially with the Italian seasoning, and just kind of smush it, let it sit for about 5 minutes, so that way when you have your first bite, it doesn't just splurge everywhere on you, and you'll thank me later.
And it's really smart about the oven cooking and then letting it rest and carry over cook, because unlike ground beef or even so with sausage, you want to make sure that it's cooked all the way through so as to avoid terrible food poisoning.
Oh, yes.
So I was like, very smart indeed.
I remember reading somewhere that as long as you have food that you've made in the oven for like at the very minimum 8 minutes at 350 degrees, then a lot of those things you wouldn't want in your burger will definitely be eradicated, especially with a burger or a patty or a steak or something along those lines. It's usually a safe bet. 8 minutes, 350 degrees. If you go higher, that could probably help. But still, I would say 8 minutes is pretty reasonable. But 12 minutes for really thick burgers like that would probably... What not only helps with the flavor, but you also don't have to worry about pink in there if you don't want it for any reason. Now, with a burger, I don't mind my burgers medium rare. Sausage, I think it is better to make sure they're cooked all the way, but not too well done. So probably about that maybe like a medium well and a half, if you will, for a sausage burger. But for a regular burger or a steak, I usually go medium rare, medium, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I love it, William. Is this something that you're going to like link a recipe to, or do you have it written down at all?
Because
I want one. I want a copy of this recipe.
I can. You know what? That actually is a good idea for our descriptions. We can have like a lit in the description. Like in this case, I mentioned. Excuse me. I mentioned a sausage burger recipe. So if you're like, ooh, how is this made? I'm going to literally put that in the description. And I may even have, like, I'll see if there's maybe a way for me to link it in other ways in the future. But for right now, I could put that in the description. So that way, all you have to do is just go down to the description of whatever podcast app you're listening to this on and just read from it there. And see what it looks like and go, ooh, I could do that. Because a lot of recipes I hope I can share with you are not too difficult. Sausage burgers are pretty easy. You just got to keep an eye on them. That's the main thing. Just keep an eye on your food and you'll be good. So, Aaron, when did cooking actually start out for you? When did that become an intriguing thing for you to do and enjoy?
I love this question because I never get asked this question. So, very excited to talk. I love cooking so much. When I was in college in the years right afterwards, like many college people, I did not have a lot of money. And it got to the point that I was on the like very low end of the poor spectrum, like scraping pennies together. I lived without electricity for a couple of years. And so without electricity, you don't have a refrigerator. And so this is kind of the sad start to my wonderful cooking journey.
Hugs.
I had to learn how to make food in quantity that I could make cheaply, but also so that it could be sustainable. So it was actually a lot of like going to the library and looking up recipes from third world countries so that I, you know, in the state of Maryland, could make food to sustain myself and my very poor roommates for a certain amount of time. So we made a lot of curries. I used to eat a lot of Ethiopian food. I used to make wat and stuff that could sit in containers without being refrigerated for a couple days. There was not a lot of meat in the dishes. It was in order to prevent spoiling, and a lot of heavy salting and spices. So that was sort of the beginning of the journey, that when I became more fortunate and in a better off place financially, I could really bring all of that knowledge of spices and creative cooking and sort of cooking with what you have in large quantity to, oh, okay, here's like a prime rib and here's, you know, I'm going to cook all of this chicken for 20 people. But that was the beginning and of my journey. Yeah. So that was, I guess I was in my early 20s.
Oh, wow. Just a quick side note. I remember my mom mentioning something about a prime rib recipe, and I don't know if any of you guys listening have ever made a rib prime rib like this. I really want to try it at some point, but you apparently would have to sear it at high heat for a very short amount of time on both sides, and then you would put it in the oven at like 500 degrees for a few minutes, and then just turn off the oven and just let it sit for multiple hours, at least 2 hours, and then by the time you would take it out, it would look beautiful. I'm like, really? You just sear it, then put it in the oven, and then turn off the oven and just let it sit. That's it. And you get this.
It's that simple.
It's that simple. That's where a lot of really interesting stuff happens with all sorts of different foods that are just like, wait, that's all it takes? And I will say I didn't start out that way. I didn't start out thinking, oof, cooking should be easy. No, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified the first time I wanted to make my I made tortellinis first. That was the first food I made by myself.
Oh, my goodness. That's kind of ambitious.
But chili, that was the one I was the most scared to do. Because I thought,
why?
Well, number one, I didn't want to screw it up. I didn't want to buy all of these contents that you would need to create chili, and all of a sudden it just wouldn't taste good. And that was about maybe 8 years ago, somewhere around there. I want to say 8 years ago. It might have seven or eight years ago, somewhere around there, because I was still in college at the time. And I just thought I should actually make my own chili and just see what happens. And I looked up some recipes for it, and I tried turkey beef and chili powder and salt and pepper and beans and all the stuff I know I like in a chili. And back then, I didn't want to use onions. Now it's like, I have to use onions for chili because they really do add to it. But what was really funny to me was like the first time I put it all together before I let it simmer, I thought, this doesn't look like chili. This does not look like the chili I usually make. This does, this is going to suck. I can't believe this. This is going to be terrible. Why would anyone want to eat this? And I was like, okay, just let it sit for as long as the directions say. And then after I let it simmer, it looked like chili. It tasted like chili, and it was really good. So that's what really kicked off everything, when I just overcame fear. And remember, everyone, you're going to get tired of me saying it, but fear is the mind killer. So do expect many Dune references throughout the show, like in One Shot's D&D character podcast. But yeah, that was where my cooking endeavors began, was me trying to overcome my fear of making chili and screwing up. I ended up making it. It was great. And then it led to crock pot making. It led to me making pastas and casserole dishes and eventually tacos, which probably my favorite recipe of all time right now is birria tacos.
So that's funny, because mentioning crock pots, that was a lot of the stuff that when I started out, I cooked in closed containers because we had a gas oven, so I still could use the oven. It just wasn't. But anyway, back to the, sorry, I just brought back a memory there.
Ooh.
Recently, now I do a lot of Instant Pot cooking. I'm super obsessed with my Instant Pot.
I need an Instant Pot.
It's like, well, what's great is that they do have a crock pot setting. So if you wanted to do slow cooking, you can. But it's getting that oh, I cooked this for hours. I slaved away all day. But in like an hour is very much more conducive to my very hectic schedule of having a full-time job, two small children and a wonderful husband, and all of this voice work that I do on the back end of things every single day. Yeah. So it's the Instant Pot is a lifesaver. And I've been able to find almost all of my favorite recipes, which are, I grew up in New Jersey. So as I got older and I started cooking more for myself and for other people when I was better off, I tried to replicate a lot of the recipes I had as a child growing up from my Italian neighbors. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of chicken marsala, eggplant parmesan, chicken parmesan, things like that. And I make my own marinara from scratch. It takes like all day. I love it. It's so good. But that's when I had more time. So there are Instant Pot versions of all of these things that make me really angry because like chicken parm, eggplant parm, and even chicken marsala are like labors of love. There's a lot of labor intensive front ends for all of those recipes. Either you're pounding out the chicken or you're slicing your eggplant really thin. This is my advice for the cooking people. So if you look up, for those of you out there that want to use these recipes, yes, when you look up eggplant parmesan recipes, oftentimes they'll tell you to slice your eggplants like a quarter inch thick and then coat them in kosher salt and then let them sit for like an hour. I do that for like 6 hours. Like I'll do it.
Oh my.
I'll like do it in the beginning of the day and then come back to them at the end. And then word from the wise, make sure you wash off the kosher salt and dry thoroughly before using the eggplant in your eggplant parmesan recipe. I one time forgot to wash off the kosher salt and I went through the labor intensive process of layering all of my eggplant and baking it for hours. And then it came out and it was awful because everything was covered in salt.
No!
It was so bad. But I would do it for more than that because the eggplants are so watery. They're so water filled that the salt draws out all of that liquid. But you have to be careful because when you're putting oil on it, they also absorb all of that oil. So you can end up with a gooey mess. So it's this really delicate balance that requires some trial and error that might not all be the same depending on your environment, mm-hmm, and what kind of oils you're using to cook with and what have you. And something I have to deal with now, I live in Colorado and I have never had to think about high altitude cooking. Like you always see those little footnotes at the bottom of the recipes, like if you're cooking, use this much more flour and cook at this temperature for blah, blah, blah. Like I have to actually pay attention to that now.
Always good to pay attention to that.
Oh, where do you live?
Oh, I live in Brownsville, Tennessee. That's where I live.
Are you on? And so you're in this like higher altitude land of despair?
Despair, yeah. Where it's a lot of cotton fields, a Walmart, and many restaurants closing. So I gotta make sure I make a decent amount of food over here sometimes. Though a lot of which my dad won't even eat because he grew up eating really, really well done foods and no cheese. He didn't like cheese. So it's like, most of everything I would make, it would be like stuff that my mom and I would enjoy. The only thing I can think of that I can make where it's really hard to screw up and he'll still eat is pork chops. That's the easiest thing for me to make involving like the entire family. But the stuff I really like to make over here usually are breakfast quesadillas, birria tacos, which I had mentioned earlier, chicken, carrots, and potato type mixture with chicken broth. I really don't know what to call it, but it's a beautiful, healthy mixture. Minestrone soup, all that sort of stuff. And even with the limits of our Supercenter, Walmart, and one other grocery store, I could still somehow make some stuff. But if I go out of town and go to a Kroger, I can get some good stuff that way. And my last major creation I had never made before, but I'm so glad I did, was naan bread pizza. N-A-A-N.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It was so freaking good. And I will say, one of my big fears still involving cooking to this very day is making bread. I have not made bread, but I My mom and I tried to make banana bread at one point, and we failed miserably. So having already prepared crusts and just getting the sauce, the cheese, and the toppings and seasonings that you want, it's pretty easy to do. But with non-bread, it's better. I think it's the best already made crust imaginable for me with pizza right now, even though I've had really good flatbread already prepared crust and garlic cheese already prepared crust. Those are really good, but naan bread is fantastic and you can use it for all sorts of stuff. But
well, I'll try it. But remember, I'm from Jersey, so I'm very picky about my pizza.
That is fair. I will say, at some point during we could call it season one of Voices That Cook. At some point during this season, I will make a solemn vow. I am going to make a Roman style pizza. That is going to happen. I feel like that is something I could actually do.
Are you going to build like a brick oven in your yard?
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
I'll probably use my regular oven. But that what I really like about the Roman pizza is you can basically do what you need to do with the dough that you would normally need to do with the dough, but you can let it still be put in a casserole, not really a casserole dish, but a baking sheet, and still allow it to rise and increase in size and all that good stuff without having to worry about needing to make the dough as thin as possible or rolled out the right way and all this sort of stuff. It just feels like there's a better way for me to go about it that, like, I feel like I'm going to screw up less with a Roman pizza. Plus, I just love those kinds of pizzas very much. And you can just add in a crap ton of cheese and pepperoni and whatever toppings you want, and it's going to feed a family just from that one thing. Whereas a 12-inch pizza, I could eat it within a day because it would be delicious as hell. Whereas a Roman pizza, I know I'm not going to finish that in a day. That's going to be me and one other person just, I can't believe we ate all that.
After this show, I'll have to get your address because if you're going to get that serious about pizza, I'm going to have to send you a pizza peel because I know this is a little extra, but I have several pizza peels in my house and I would love to bestow upon you a pizza peel for your pizza endeavors.
Oh my goodness. That makes me so happy that you're willing to do that. Thank you. You're so sweet. I may have to record like side episodes on updates or something about like, hey, here's how this pizza went.
Well, you'll definitely, at the very least, you have to update me. I guess everyone would need to know.
Oh, yes.
You would
have
to do so.
Which we can.
But if you haven't used a pizza peel, it's that, for those of you in the audience, it's that paddle that you see at restaurants, like the proper restaurants that are putting it in a brick oven or wood. Like, I'm super extra in my oven at home. I'm like, da-da-da-da, with my peel. But I'm going to. But no, I do. I literally accidentally bought two when I meant to buy one. So I have an extra peel. I'll send it to you.
There you go. Seriously, thank you so much. That's definitely the main food that I am the most looking forward to creating in the future. That's what I'm looking forward to the most and need to get over the fear of. You'll screw it up. Don't screw it. Don't worry about it. Just try it. And once you've tried it, you'll be fine. I was scared about making certain foods over the last few years, and all of a sudden, hey, it turned out fine. And I know if I can do it, you guys can do it too, which this actually brings me up to my last question before we have to bounce. I wanted to know, Aaron, like, what is your favorite recipe?
Oh, why was I not prepared for this? My favorite... Oh, it's bad. That's so bad. So I was prepared with all of these recipes that I've cooked for other people. And what is my favorite recipe? What do I... So I think this is fair. I have a favorite recipe that I love to cook, and then there's a favorite recipe that I love to eat. And One of the things that I do is I buy essentially novelty cookbooks. So I'll based off of some kind of intellectual property that I love, like, for example, there's a Fallout cookbook, there's a Dungeons and Dragons official cookbook, there's an Elder Scrolls cookbook, there's the Necronomnom,
which I really want.
Is an H.P. Lovecraft inspired.
I really want that, especially after making the David Miscavige audio stage play.
I have this collection, and one of the recipes I really enjoy is braised. It's in the Fallout cookbook. It's called the Braised Deathclaw Steak, which is a braised pork belly recipe. And I'm not, I can't describe it because it is a copyrighted thing. I can't just like give the recipe out. But what I can say is that it's this beautiful Asian-inspired dish where you basically braise the cubed pork belly in a mixture of spices and different sauces. And it's kind of like a low and slow heat that you add different whole spices to that you will strain out later.
Ooh.
And then fresh vegetables on top and serve over rice with the sauce, which reduces. You then like drain the sauce and you can reduce the sauce into this gorgeous like thick reduction. And put that over the whole meal. And I like making that because it's my husband's favorite dish. And it's our special, because pork belly is expensive. This is not a daily thing. And it's not the best thing in the world for you.
No.
Since it's basically what that part of the pig is where they cut the bacon from. It's that part, except instead of cutting it into bacon slices, it's just like a slab of the bacon, essentially. So you cube that and you're like, oh, this is so good. Well, of course it is. You're eating like cubed bacon.
Cubed bacon is preciously preciously enjoyably delicious, good stuff.
But I guess right now my favorite thing to eat, I'm kind of obsessed with a recipe out of the Heroes Feast Dungeons and Dragons official cookbook. They make this under the halfling section, because why would you even have other sections of a Dungeons and Dragons cookbook? Because, like, I understand the novelty of being like, oh, dwarven cuisine or oh, elven cuisine, great, okay, but the halflings know how to cook, though. Like,
yes.
Let's be real here. And it is this chicken and dumplings recipe that is out of this world, which once again is, it doesn't take too long. I think it takes about an hour and a half, 2 hours, but everything's homemade. So you make the dumplings from scratch, you like skin the chicken, and it's really, once again, like you feel the love that's going into the dish, but it's a lot healthier for you than the braised death claw.
Oh, wow.
And I enjoy eating it because it tastes like just as savory, but it's a lot better for you. So I like to eat on the healthier side of things.
Do you think that your chicken and dumplings would be best for first breakfast, second breakfast, after 11sies, luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner, and or supper?
I feel like it's a supper dish. I really do. It could be dinner. I have made it for lunch. That was a mistake. It was too heavy. But, you know.
I'm going to have to try this.
But to be fair, like, you eat and you sleep. That's sort of what halflings do. It's and smoke.
Yeah, you smoke weed every day. I cannot
smoke. I'm in Colorado. I don't smoke, though. I don't. No, but I am in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's totally allowed here.
Totally allowed in Colorado, but not in Tennessee. Oh, boy. Though, could you imagine being stoned and eating Hobbit food all of the time?
I can't, because I wouldn't know what that feels like. No, that would be pretty awesome.
I am very glad that this first episode went off incredibly well, and I knew it would, because I have Aaron Nicole Lundquist, sorry. It went so well, and then I mispronounced your last name.
It happens all the time. It's okay.
All good. But I'm so glad I got to have you on here. Voices That Cook was a concept that I knew would be fun, but gosh, it was so much fun having you on here, Aaron. Thank you so much for being the first guest on here. And I'm glad we got to touch on the cookbooks, because I remember you mentioning that to me, and I was like, I got to have you on in the first episode just for that. Just for that. So we have those to look forward to. I have chicken and dumplings I really want to try. I have a pizza that I'm going to be keeping y'all promised on. And last but certainly not least, I got to let y'all know where to follow us on the social medias. So where can the listeners of Voices That Cook follow you, my friend?
All right. Well, on Twitter, I am Erin Lundquist, VA. That you can find me there. And basically, if you just Google my name, there's a plethora of things. There's an erinnicolelundquist.com that contains links to all of my social media. I do have pretty much everything, like a LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all that jazz, all that good stuff.
Yes. But
thank you guys so much for joining us. And thank you for having me, William. This has been so wonderful.
It really has been wonderful. Thank you so much. And for those of you who want to follow me on the social medias, you can follow me on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks, which is a very good spot for you to see all of the food that I have made so far. But I do sometimes share a few extra bits of food and, of course, a lot of my updates on projects and things on Twitter at Voice That Cooks. And that's another reason to follow Erin on Twitter. You've been sharing these great casting announcements and all this progress that you've made. If you want to get inspired as a voice actor, she's definitely one of the best to follow. But also just the food, the fun talks, the awesomeness. You can't go wrong with her. You just cannot.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm excited. Well, got some big announcements coming up. Very excited about.
I'm so excited, too. I'm excited, too.
So tune in.
Please tune in. Please tune in. And for those of you who have enjoyed listening to the show, thank you so much for listening. And on whatever podcast app that allows you to review the show, please do leave a review and let us know what you think of the show so far. And feel free to follow the show so you don't miss out on the next episode. And I guess if I were to have an outro for the show, it would be, keep your mics clean, keep your skillets clean, and I don't know. Actually, better yet, whatever food, if you want to cook some, no, damn, I don't have a good outro yet. We'll figure it out.
I was going to jump in and be like, but not your cast iron. Don't clean the cast iron in the dishwasher, you guys. Don't do it.
Don't you dare clean the cast iron skillet, because if you clean the cast iron skillet, you're going to have to deal with
it. It's the seasoning. It's the best part.
Yeah, the seasoning's the best part. We used to have a cast iron skillet. I need to get another one. I need an Instant Pot. I need a Dutch oven. Gosh, I need to make my jambalaya. At some point in this show, I'm going to tell you guys about my upcoming Cisco special. I'm going to have to tell you all about that at some point. I'm going to keep that a teaser.
Yeah, and you do need a Dutch oven because all the recipes I mentioned involve a Dutch oven. So if you don't have one, get a Dutch oven.
I will definitely try to get a Dutch oven. Maybe for Christmas.
There you go.
We'll see.
That's how I got mine, actually. Oh. That's what I asked for Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Alrighty then. At some point, I will come up with a decent outro, but for right now, everyone, thank you so much for listening to Voices That Cook. I hope you all go out and enjoy yourselves on this fine day, whenever you're listening to it. And if you decide, hey, I'm going to make one of these recipes, let us know in social media that you actually decided to give that a try, and maybe even share pictures. Let us see what it looked like, or if you actually also decide to just make something and go, oh, this looks great, I got to show it to you guys. Feel free, I'd love to see it. Or we'd love to see it. I feel like Erin would like it too, because
I would like to see it. Share with us.
Share!
Share!
Share the show, share your food, and share the joy. This is Voices That Cook. Thank you so much, and good day!